Welcome to this episode of Reimagining Justice, Texas Impact's special 10-part series on health equity. This series is part of our ongoing podcast, Weekly Witness, which equips Texans of faith for leadership and policy advocacy and civic engagement. I'm your host and Texas Impact's Outreach Director, Scott Atnip. You can find more information about today's episode, including blog posts and other resources on our website at texasimpact.org/weeklywitness. If you've heard the expression, your lifespan should be a function of your genetic code, not your zip code, you've been introduced to the idea of health equity. In the past 10 years, media attention has focused increasingly on the reality that health status, longevity, and other indicators of physical and emotional well-being are functions of a complex set of factors, including race, income, intergenerational wealth, educational status, and more. It turns out that having health insurance and access to healthcare is just one important piece of the puzzle. And health equity should be the primary concern of faith communities, because local congregations interact with vulnerable people through a variety of outreach activities, as well as being well-positioned to understand the connections between the many inputs that impact health. Things like access to healthy food, the availability of safe, affordable housing, and even proximity to sources of pollution. Those are all things that we call social determinants of health, the things that drive health status. We hope this podcast series inspires you to learn more about health equity and the social determinants of health in your local community so that you can be an effective advocate for a healthy future for all Texans. So we're going to jump right in. I am honored to be joined by today's guest, Laura Garicardis, the Deputy Director of the Children's Defense Fund. Laura, thank you so much for joining us.
Very happy to be here.
I'm looking forward to the conversation today, but let's start out by asking you to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. I understand you have a medical degree. So how'd you come to work at Children's Defense Fund?
Wow, that's a big question. I think I did start my career in medicine. I went to Baylor College of Medicine, and while there, I was exposed to a lot of families and patients that were dealing with issues within the healthcare system that couldn't be addressed as well within the healthcare system. A lot of social determinants of health, like you just mentioned, but also public education, connected to their community, a support system, the lack of health insurance. And I felt frustrated in a way to interacting with them kind of at the end of the road, their healthcare road, when things were more severe, when what I could give them was limited, antidepressant instead of, addressing some of their core issues. And I got interested in working on more macro scale systems issues. And long story short, I connected with the Children's Defense Fund and really found that, I had a passion for that kind of work. And I've been here now for, I think, 11 years.
All right. Well, yeah. We certainly appreciate that journey. And I for sure certainly appreciate the work you do each and every day on behalf of making lives better for Texan children. So this podcast series is focusing on health equity in Texas. Can you talk about health equity as it applies to children's health?
Yeah, I think a lot of times when people think about equity, they think about disparities within populations, and that certainly exist within healthcare coverage. Latino and Black children are less likely to be connected with healthcare coverage. That's actually getting worse in the last few years. But the lack of healthcare coverage does impact all communities. Mm-hmm. One thing that I like to think about, though, when I think about equity, is not leaving the conversation just at disparities. A lot of times when we talk about disparities, we want, Black and Latino children to meet the, access rates and coverage rates of white children. But that might not be high enough. We really need to be working towards high quality healthcare coverage and high quality access to coverage for all children. And that might actually include moving all children up. Mm-hmm. And the other piece, as you said, is it's not just about healthcare coverage. Children living in communities from communities of color face a lot more other factors in their lives that impact their health. And so even if you were to give everybody access to the same healthcare coverage, you wouldn't achieve equity. You would need, you know, targeted strategies to help support deficits that have been in the lives of children in communities of color for you know, decades.
Did I hear you say that it's getting worse?
Yes. So, you know, the good news that a lot of people might not know is for the last 10 years, every year we have done better with children's health care coverage across the nation and in Texas. We reached a historic low on children's health, the child uninsured rates, I think about 2 or 3 years ago, with about 5% of kids in the nation lacking coverage, which means 95% had coverage. But for the first time in 10 years, we are seeing our numbers reverse course. And for the first time, we saw an uptick in our child uninsured rate. And that was last year, right before the legislative session started. So the end mm-hmm. of 2018. Numbers this year are showing, you know, mass disenrollment or a lower number of children covered by Medicaid and CHIP. That all the data and all the signs are pointing to that when our census numbers come out this fall, we are going to see not only a continued rise in our child uninsured rate, but a steep rise. Some states are steeper than others, are anticipated to be steeper than others, and Texas is not looking good. In fact, our own data from our state agency shows that about 230,000 less children in Texas are enrolled for Medicaid and CHIP, and those numbers cannot be explained by an improving economy. There's something else going on, and we are in really a crisis within our children's health care coverage that I think is going to reach a new height of awareness, I hope, come this fall when the new census numbers come out.
Okay. What do you attribute that to? Any guess?
Yeah, there's been a number of reports that have come out from groups like the Georgetown University Center for Children and Families. And the points they make are, you know, one, there's scant evidence that this is due to an improving economy. Number two, that there's a number of factors contributing to this. One is, you know, something as simple in quotes as the removal of the individual mandate. Mm-hmm. When less families enroll, less children get coverage. It's something that was called the welcome mat effect. So you've weakened the welcome mat effect. Two, this administration has decimated the available funds for outreach. Texas is getting about 10% of the funds it used to get. We delayed CHIP, the reauthorization of CHIP, and that actually missed a back-to-school summer, where families didn't know if CHIP was going to be reauthorized or not. All those things have impacts. But probably the largest, or our working hypothesis of the largest, the biggest reason, the biggest factor that's impacting children's healthcare coverage is the anti-immigrant policy and rhetoric coming from our administration. This week, the public charge rule was published, and that has created a lot of confusion amongst immigrant communities. And the bottom line on that is that while it impacts a very small group of people in terms of their ability to apply for their green card, the issue is so confusing and the consequences are so scary with the whole family separation thing and deportations and all that, that it is sending a chilling effect across the immigrant community, where families, without learning more about who the public charge rule actually affects, are choosing just to disenroll from anything that could be seen as a public assistance mm-hmm. program. And, you know, we've been hearing stories all year, even before the rule was published, of families going into their doctor's office, even with their kids with disabilities and high healthcare needs, asking to disenroll their kids. Mm-hmm. And it creates a really strange predicament because, for example, in counties that have their indigent programs, like the I used to remember the Gold Card in Houston. I know it's called something else now, but MAP here in Austin, et cetera. Children actually can't qualify for that if they're eligible for Medicaid. And if a family doesn't want to be enrolled in Medicaid, you know, what is the county indigent program going to do? Are they going to leave those kids uninsured? Or are they going to – so it's very dangerous. The anti-immigrant policies, including the public charge, are extremely dangerous, for children, for communities. The rising rate of uninsured is going to, hurt healthcare systems in rural communities and urban communities. It's a public health crisis. So one of the big jobs ahead of us as healthcare advocates is making sure that people understand what's in the public charge rule, who is affected by it, and that we all, do our part in educating, the factual information to the community.
All right. I will note, since you mentioned last week on the public charge, that we are recording this towards the end of August. That's all right. So speaking of children's health here in Texas, how do we compare to other states?
Well, we are the worst in the nation.
Oh, that makes me sad.
Yep. We have the highest number and the highest rate of uninsured people, of uninsured children in the country. Our rate is double the national average at 10.7%. The last census numbers showed that our uninsured rate increased by 83,000 kids. And then, as I was mentioning before, our Medicaid and CHIP enrollment data is showing that near about 230,000 less children are enrolled. So I think we're going to see some bad numbers once again this fall for when we get the new census numbers.
Well, on that sobering note, why don't we collect ourselves by taking a quick break to recognize our sponsors.
You're listening to Reimagining Justice, Texas Impact's special podcast series on health equity. Texas Impact is Texas's oldest and largest interfaith advocacy network. We work for freedom, justice, and opportunity for all people. We advance public policies that are consistent with broadly held religious social teachings by mobilizing people of faith to talk to policymakers and to other members of their communities. To find out more and get involved, go to our website, www.texasimpact.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Reimagining Justice is made possible by the generous support of Methodist Healthcare Ministries of South Texas, serving humanity to honor God by improving the physical, mental, and spiritual health of those least served in the Rio Texas Conference of the United Methodist Church. Methodist Healthcare Ministries is a private, faith-based, not-for-profit organization dedicated to creating access to healthcare for the uninsured in South Texas through direct services, community partnerships, and strategic grant making. Reimagining Justice is also supported by the DentaQuest Partnership for Oral Health Advancement, revolutionizing oral health to create an effective and equitable system that results in improved oral health and well-being for everyone. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of Texas Impact and do not necessarily reflect the views of our sponsors. If you appreciate this podcast, we hope you will consider financially supporting Texas Impact with a monthly contribution. You can donate securely and easily on our website, texasimpact.org. And now, back to our program.
Welcome back. Look forward to maybe having some more hopeful news than we left you before the break. So I'm wondering if you could give us some steps that we could take to help improve children's health here in Texas.
Yes, there is a lot that we can do and that every state can do. You know, first and foremost, it is contacting your elected officials and telling them that they must prioritize healthcare coverage for Texans and children in specific. This legislative session that we just finished in 2019 was, you know, named the session for public education, which is fantastic. But I think our job is to make sure that 2021 is the session for healthcare coverage. And that's for a few reasons. One is that healthcare coverage was largely ignored this last legislative session. And the legislature even passed on opportunities that would have cost nothing to help up to 50,000 kids who are eligible for Medicaid and CHIP stay connected to their coverage. So the lack of interest by the legislature is pretty stark, or pretty impressive. So, you know, we need to send the message that 2021 has to be the healthcare coverage session. The other reason is because some people may have heard of something quite wonky, the 1115 Medicaid waiver. Mm-hmm. But the easy way to think about that is that those are the federal funds that are essentially keeping our hospital and healthcare safety net system alive. And so that is a hospital that any of us use, whether you have insurance or you don't. Hospitals rely on Medicaid funding. And that waiver, those funds are expiring in 2022. So without replacing those funds with the Medicaid expansion dollars, for example, that are actually a lot larger than the funds in the waiver, or some other source, we're gonna have, you know, a real crisis in our hospital and healthcare system across the state. We already have the highest rate of rural hospital closures, largely for issues like this, and hospitals in large urban centers are extremely worried. They're worried they might have to shut, you know, major divisions of their, you know, of their system, like labor and delivery or emergency room diversion and things that really will impact all of us. So that's why it has to be the healthcare coverage session for our next session. But other things that can be done, as I was saying, we need to educate as many people about the public charge rule. And essentially, kind of the quick answer on that one is that it only is technically affects three populations. One is someone who is legally here mm-hmm. and applying to get their green card. So they don't have their green card yet. They're applying for it. Or someone who's legally here and hopes to apply for their green card at some point. And the third is somebody who is either a legal permanent resident or a citizen and is trying to bring a family member over from another country. If you are in those groups, the answer is still not necessarily to drop any benefits that you or your family may be using, but to consult with a qualified immigration service or legal attorneys. Because the landscape for you as an applicant has actually totally changed. And it might actually help you very little if you were to drop a program that is helping you and your family at the moment. If you are, you know, in any other group, you aren't being directly impacted. And so we need to get the word out that any other group should definitely continue to keep their children in Medicaid and CHIP, continue to use SNAP benefits, continue to use, you know, these public programs that are very successful in actually lifting families out of poverty and having them and their children succeed later in life. For Medicaid, for example, children who have Medicaid are more likely to graduate, attend school, perform better in school, graduate high school, go to college, be higher income earners as adults, and be healthier as adults. People need to make sure they're well informed before they would drop a program that is so vital to helping their families and their children succeed. That's another thing that can be done. And maybe the last one I would say is, we got to get to a place where we expand coverage here in Texas. We cannot have the highest rate of uninsured people and uninsured children in the country and think that we're going to have a healthy healthcare system. On that note, the Children's Defense Fund, Texas Impact, and about a dozen other public interest organizations have kicked off this year a nonpartisan grassroots campaign for healthcare coverage with the goal of lifting local voices and sending a clear message to policymakers and candidates that are running next year that they must do something about our sky-high uninsured rates in Texas.
Yeah, and I think we're going to have you back another day to talk about that in particular. But let me back up a little bit to ask you about the visits that we're hoping people will be making to their legislators, because I feel like sometimes folks get intimidated, not weekly witness listeners, because they tune in every week and are legislative experts and make visits all of the time. But some other people who might be tuning in get nervous about making legislative visits because they hear about the 1115 waiver and the public charge, and they might not know all of those words and all of those terms. Mm-hmm. But really, this is a kitchen table issue for a lot of people. So is the advice you would give to tell your story, or what advice would you give to somebody who might not be a legislative expert going to make those legislative visits?
Yeah, I do realize it can be intimidating, even for professional advocates. I still get some butterflies in my stomach every right. time I call an office to voice my opinion. But really, the message about healthcare does not need to be complicated. Always just state who you are. I'm a constituent. If there's a way to, make you more of a human being to them, I'm part of the school board, or I'm, or whatever it is. I volunteer here. I work in this thing. And I'm very concerned about the number of Texans and the number of children that don't have healthcare coverage. And I am calling to ask that y'all take care of this next legislative session. Mm-hmm. It could really be something as simple as that. And like you said, in terms of personal stories, I think it's hard for me to find someone who doesn't have a healthcare story, mm-hmm. either for themselves or their family members, even
or somebody in their congregation for sure.
Somebody yeah. that they know, even my own family, my mom and dad are on. Are on the exchange. And every time, Texas files a suit to try to get rid of the Affordable Care Act, my parents' healthcare coverage is at risk. Before the Affordable Care Act, they were subject to pre-existing condition exclusions. Mm-hmm. In terms of the uninsured, if you don't think you're part of that, go through a day in your life and everyone you interact with and ask them or think, just wonder, do they have health insurance? Think one in four-ish Texans don't have health insurance. One in four women of childbearing age don't have health insurance. Many childcare workers don't have health insurance. I tend to say the people that build our houses, make our foods, and care for our children, are people that are lacking healthcare coverage. The rates are actually even higher in rural communities. If you can't find a story just going through your day and realizing the folks around you that you do care about, think about just the hospital, that you won't need to make sure that your hospital is there when you need it. And you know that Medicaid funding is critical for that. And you need to make sure that you're calling your elected. I need to make sure that you are going to maximize the Medicaid funds that are that belong to Texas and make sure that they're not going to other states. Because that's what happens when we don't maximize opportunities to bring back our federal tax dollars through Medicaid, is that other states end up using them to cover their folks and Texans get left out.
Certainly, I know a lot of the focus has been on Medicaid and expanding health access. Is there anything, any way to start the conversation on any of these other social determinants of health when we have those conversations with legislators or others?
Yeah, in terms of a connection, I think the one thing I would say there is that a lot of conversations about social determinants of health are actually focused on adult populations and seniors because the cost is, children are relatively affordable to cover. So when a healthcare system looks at high cost individuals, they tend to be older, you know, a homeless man that has unmanaged, you know, diabetes and is having to come into the emergency room every few weeks, you know, and what he needs is, you know, maybe a house and a nurse, someone to make sure he's getting his medicines or can pick them up or whatnot. The returns on investment for that are really huge immediately. They're immediately big. What's getting left out is conversations about social determinants of health for children, because the immediate value is smaller. But we need to think about value in a different way when we're thinking about children, and it needs to be you know, a much more future-looking frame. Because we do know that the investments made when you're young have huge payoffs as a child grows. But so all of that is to say that children are actually not being thought about enough in conversations about social determinants of health. And so a big message people can carry is making sure policymakers and anybody talking about social determinants of health is not forgetting about children, and the children have to be part of the conversation.
All right. So you've been doing this for a while. Is there anything that gives you hope for Texas's health future?
Yeah, I think what gives me hope is our Texans. Poll after poll, you know, questions about whether the legislature needs to take action to address our high uninsured rates, you know, are in the 87% of Texans. Even for expanding Medicaid or expanding access to coverage are 60-70%. It is always one of the top three voting issues. So it's hard for me to imagine that a issue that is so important to, you know, everyday Texans, everyday families in their everyday lives could be ignored indefinitely. And I think the day is coming that our Texas legislature will just need to address this. But we can help that go a lot faster by getting organized. And that's why we actually, by the time this airs, we should have our website. But that's why, as I was saying, CDF, Texas Impact, and many others have gotten behind the grassroots campaign for healthcare that is in action right now. And it's hashtag SickOfItTX that people can connect with.
Well, I certainly find hope in you. Is there anything else you'd like to shamelessly plug today, or how can we get a hold of you?
No, I think I did my plug already. Thank you.
All right. Well, Laura, thank you so much for your time today. But more, thank you for the work that you're doing each and every day on behalf of Texas children. And thanks to all of you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. We'll be releasing more content next week. But until then, I hope you will rate and review the podcast and share this content with your friends and congregations. And if you've made it this far in the program, you seem to appreciate the content. So please make sure that you and your congregation are members of Texas Impact by going to texasimpact.org/join. Friends, thanks again. We'll look forward to seeing you next week. Until then, let's get to work.
Reimagining Justice is a production of Texas Impact and the Texas Interfaith Center for Public Policy. Engineered by David Vassallo, executive producer Bea Moorhead. Our series is recorded in Austin, Texas.